The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
I was 16 when I started the relationship. I obviously didn't get into strip clubs at 16. So I started in those clubs when I was about 20.
Okay.
But that relationship lasted 11 years. Childless relationship where there was nothing keeping me to this motherfucker. Okay? There was nothing there. No bonds, no connection. What it was, and we're starting to see people talk about it more now, the trauma bonds, you know what I mean? And just your brain craves the familiar, even when the familiar is a shit situation.
It's a wonderful chaos, beautifully random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest, and fight to find peace, both head and the heart,
like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers,
and the atheist pray?
It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos, and we like it that way.
And today we're having strip clubs,
toxic relationships, and depression. And we're going to have that with Lisa Latimer.
Latimer.
So, how are you?
Doing pretty good. I two clients booked today.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, as I'm sending the messages out, I've seen also there's a different energy in how I'm working. It's like I'm sending love out.
Yeah.
I feel excitement for my new packages. I'm like, oh, this is love. This is love.
Yeah.
And I had a guy, he's like in a financial alternative scene.
Uh-huh.
And we spoke for like a good 40 minutes about a shoot that we've booked now for September. And as we hanged up, I was like, just want to say that it feels like I'm going to photograph a friend in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And apparently my camera is going to be there and we're going to have a coffee. And
yeah.
And he just laughed. He's like, yeah, I feel the same way. And it's been really beautiful.
That's beautiful. So depression, toxic relationship, and strip clubs. So we are going to bring on Lisa before we go any further. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Lisa, thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Just getting to know you before we went live, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a fun show. You have, like, it feels like you fully embraced.
Yeah.
And even looking at the title, is like, you're like, ha, ha, ha.
So how is it for you even to see a show title like that and think, God, how do we even start a show like this?
Oh, gosh. You started anywhere. With that title, you could start anywhere. I think people pretty much anticipate that it's going to be batshit crazy just by the title. Yeah. But honestly, it with the crazy title, ironically, I feel like it's probably going to be such an impactful interview because – you know, people that aren't afraid to own their shift, that's usually where you really get the nuggets from. People that can come to you bare ass and talk about it and walk through what they went through. That's where you really get nuggets that help you.
Yeah.
Nice.
She just said something. I don't know if I heard it correctly, but it was really, it really shifted how you said own their shift. I heard. Is that what you
own
said?
Own their shift. I do own your shift lives every Monday in my Facebook group. And I'm like, you have to own your shit technically before you can go anywhere. Like owning your shit is the starting point. It's the jump off point before you can hit the ground running. So it just makes sense to start there. And then.
No, I totally agree with you. And I heard it incorrectly because of the Long Island accent. I heard own your shift.
It is own your shift.
Oh, okay, good.
That's her podcast.
Yeah.
Because I'm losing my I think it's an incredible name because of what it means.
Yeah.
Yeah, special. Yeah.
I'm really curious because you've said you've been on other podcasts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this the most outrageous title you've had or like –
are you kidding me? Absolutely. Most of the podcasts I go on, I talk about how you link your personal growth and development to your business growth.
Bravo.
Yeah, you know, but it's
that's
so
what attracted me to this one. I was like, oh, I could have some fun talking about this and, you know, give some nuggets along the way.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? Because the one thing that I'm like always frustrated in life is when we push away our past as if we should shame it or think negatively, then basically we still have the work to do. Like once you just see it as a process, something I went through, something that doesn't, it, you know, if I look back at it, I certainly wouldn't do that today, but hey, it's what happened. And in ways it formed and shaped me. So I'm even grateful for it. That's when we've kind of made it out the back end.
Absolutely. And it's funny because you hear a lot of gurus saying, oh, you know, you could just light a match and burn the bridge to your past, or don't look back because that's not the direction you're going. There's so much value there. You learn so much from looking back at it, as long as you do it in a way that's, you know, that's mindful and from a perception where this is value. This isn't something that I'm tied to. This doesn't predict my future.
Yeah.
These are just gems that are going to help me avoid pitfalls along the way. I like to say that like our limiting beliefs in our past could be like a horror movie character, like a Michael Myers from Halloween. Yeah. Where just when you think you've slayed it because you've either avoided it and you've been going on long enough without any major hiccups, all of a sudden you turn around and there's that white blank sphere looking at you and it's like, fuck, I didn't kill it. And it just keeps coming back. So yeah, getting into your past and owning your shit is the jump off point.
Yeah.
So my first question, Lisa, is who was the girl that walked into, I don't know what it was first, toxic relationship or strip club?
Yeah. It was, or the relationship came first, but it started to get toxic. So it was a little, you know, it happened very close together, I have to say. So the line with that is kind of blurred, but yeah, they got more and more toxic together. Once the two combined, it turned into a shit fest.
How old are we talking when this began?
Well, I was 16. You know what? No. So I have to say the toxic relationship started first. I was 16 when I started the relationship. I obviously didn't get into strip clubs at 16. So I started in those clubs when I was 20.
Okay.
But that relationship lasted 11 years. So the point where it started going downhill and when I start, you know, when I started working in the strip clubs matches, it lines up about the same.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You stayed in the relationship for 11 years.
For 11 years. That's a long time.
A childless relationship where there was nothing keeping me to this motherfucker. Okay? There was nothing there. No bonds, no connection. What it was, and we're starting to see people talk about it more now, the trauma bonds. You know what I mean? And just your brain craves the familiar, even when the familiar is a shit circumstance, a situation. Your brain knows what to expect, and when you start trying to change, that's why sometimes you feel like you get pulled back in. Your brain wants that comfort zone.
I'm curious what a shitstorm of a day would look like in that relationship.
Yeah. What was like a worst day that you had in that relationship?
Oh, absolute gaslighting. Funny enough, my intuition was so on point. I used to have dreams about my ex cheating on me. And I'd do my little searching and digging. Sure enough, I'd always find something to confront him about. You know, I'd get gaslit within an inch of me knowing which way was up and which way was down. And, you know, that added to the uncertainty.
So, gaslit, that means when someone lies to you so openly and comfortably that they try to convince you that you're crazy.
And you think that it's you, and you think that the problem is you because they've done such a good job of just naturally making you feel like that. So the worst situation I would say was, ooh, this was a good one. I was living in Brooklyn with, this was the second and last toxic relationship that I was in. And I didn't know that he had a drug problem that he was hiding from me. I was very, believe it or not, I worked in strip clubs, but I was naive to drugs, and thank God I never fell into that trap. But he had heroin addiction. And so one day I took maybe 20 minutes longer than usual to come home because I stopped at a store. They didn't have what I wanted. So I didn't have a receipt to prove that I stopped at a store. So I come home and he's convinced that I was out cheating on him in 20 minutes. Like, you know, the craziest quickie you could possibly imagine. So, and not realizing that he was reeling from having gone back onto heroin, he if you could picture like Russian roulette type of, you know, with a knife though. I was threatened for like an hour at knife point to just admit that I was cheating on him. And like, what do you do in a situation where someone is on drugs and they're so convinced of what they believe the truth is, but it's not actually the truth? Part of me was just like, appeal to him and tell him what he seems to want to hear, which is that you were cheating on him. But then the other part of me was like, no, fuck that. Stick to your truth. You weren't cheating on him, and you've got to make him see that. Like, it's your job to convince him that you love him.
Bullshit.
So he finally was, and just to say, this was a year, I think this was back in 2005 or 2008. There had been a lot of stories on the news at this time of young women being killed by their boyfriends. And what was going through my mind at that time was, holy shit, my parents are going to get that phone call.
Yeah.
My parents don't deserve to be one of these parents that gets the phone call that their, you know, that their daughter was found stabbed by their significant other. And here's the kicker. That wasn't the craziest thing. The craziest thing was I convinced him that I wasn't cheating on him. He came down off of the high, I guess. And he said to me, I'll understand if you're not here tomorrow when I get back from work. And here's the crazy fucking part. I was there. And he came in from work, so seeing me, like, I thought he'd be so happy that I was there. He was actually disturbed that I was there. So I had to say, and only in reflecting back, I said to myself, wow, this person who was like in a state of batshit crazy on heroin actually is more disturbed about what happened last night than I am. And that actually prompted him to go into rehab because he said, you deserve better. I deserve better. Like, this is fucked up. So as much as I would like to admit that at that time I was strong enough and I had the whatever in me to leave that situation, no, it was actually someone who had a heroin addiction, who was fucked up, who had a pattern of, you know, going to jail and a rough, you know, rough childhood, but had a pattern of making horrible decisions that made this really responsible decision that affected both of our lives positively.
Wow.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
Everyone in my life who I've ever known to be on heroin
didn't have the moral fortitude
out. It was like, that was even more important than life, than anything.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. That's how that ended. It wasn't my own, you know, whatever. What do I chalk it up to? I chalk it up to the hand of God intervening. Some people might chalk it up to the universe. I chalk it up to, you know, divine intervention. Something sparked something within him to make a move that got us out of that toxic union.
So let's discuss, let's get to the bare roots of this. Yeah. Was it mom or dad that didn't give you the love you needed, so you needed to go to some weirdo like this?
You know what's funny is I have a really close relationship with my parents now. And my father, when I came clean to him about what I had done, and that was only, you know, recently, I'm sure I can't imagine what a dagger through his heart that must have been. But there was a time where I was constantly bumping heads with both of my parents. What led me to that, though, was not a lack of attention or love from them, but it was this message that I received from both of them, which was, my mother was a stay-at-home mother, right? And she had previously been working, very independent. My father used to always throw jabs at her and say things to me and my sisters like, you know, don't, and my mother would say too, because she didn't like her situation, don't ever rely on a man. Go make your own money. So I was sent, unintentionally, by the way, this is not their fault, but I processed that as the person that's in the relationship that has the money has the control, has the power. You don't ever want to be the person that's on the receiving end of that, right? And here's the irony in that, is that even though in most, in those two toxic relationships that I was in, even though I was the one with the money, I was not the one with the power and not the one with the control, because emotionally, it was not there. It was not there. The confidence wasn't there. The self-assurance wasn't there. The money was there. So I could support myself, but you know, beyond that money, beyond that message of you need to be smart, you need to go to school, and you need to make a lot of money. Well, I was like, fuck that. I found a shortcut to making the money. So I don't, you know, I was constantly, I would go to school, stop 3 weeks into a semester, be like, fuck this. I'm going to go to school to come out and make a nice tax burdened living like the rest of these fools. Yeah. You know, yeah. That's the arrogance that you have when you're younger and you think you know it all.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course I didn't have the emotional maturity and development. So ironically, I thought I was carrying out my parents' advice, but boy, was I mistaken. It actually led me to stall for over 11 years.
Wow. It's funny because my wife, Ronnie, will always tell me the story of how her grandma took her aside and told her never be reliant on a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she remembers that from very young age. And she'll share that often with me, how mm-hmm. it was really from a very young age told her, don't be reliant on a man. You have to be able to take care of yourself.
Right. And it's so well-intentioned, but think about it. It's such general advice. And so understanding how things can get processed so sideways, I do things completely differently with my kids. Like we sit down and have conversations, even though they're only 8 and 6. And, you know, I don't necessarily drop things so heavy like that on them. I relate it in other ways. But yeah, things go sideways in your head once it goes from here to here and here, you know?
Oh man, the impact that we have just from the things that we say, and I'm sure it was all good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about you said that you would always look for things in the relationship.
Mm.
Yeah, because I knew it was no good. I knew.
Okay, so there was no trust, but still you were there.
I was still there. Yep.
So what was your predominant feeling like that was dominating you then? Because as you were speaking, I just feel tension in my body.
Yeah. The predominant feeling then was a place of needing. See, even though I had the money, I still felt like I needed this person for validation. So just because, and I tell you, everything that I say is so ironic, right? Because just because I was on stage and I had people throwing money at me and, you know, whatever, you think, oh, that would make you feel visible, right? That makes you feel wanted. No, it didn't do that for me. So being with this person, the fact that this person chose me, mm-hmm. even though he was, you know, occasionally here, there, and wherever, that at that time, because I was so undeveloped, you know, up here, that made me feel validated. It was, I have a close family member who was going through this recently. It's the pick me. Like, I'm not your only one, but as long as you pick me, you know, the majority of the time, and you put me in the most valuable, like the MVP space, like that's good enough for me. And that's bullshit. Right. And there are way too many of us that in different situations, not just relationships, that sit there and feel like, okay, well, as long as I'm like, you know, here, like that's good enough for me. It shouldn't be good enough for anyone.
We had a show with someone who was a karaoke waitress. It was one of my favorite shows. Wow. And one of the hardest things for me to hear was that they rank ordered the waitresses. And so that when someone came in, they would choose the pictures, and the pictures that were higher on the board were more expensive. So these women were actually gaining their self of identity through where they appeared on this board.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, that's not shocking. Look at social media today. Look at how many of us, and especially young people, place so much of their identity and their value based on how many likes, comments, shares, something that their post gets. Mm-hmm. So we have a way in society of kind of doing that in all different things. And it's all vanity. It's all vanity metrics, whether it's on social media, whether it's, you know, a system like that, it's all vanity metrics. And the thing about that is it's a house of cards that it falls. And then when it falls, everything comes crumbling down on your head. And then you don't know which way is up or which way is down.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me an idea. How much would you make a week when you worked in this place, or a night, just for relatives? So I have an idea of what this really is.
You want to laugh?
Yeah.
How much do you think? Take a guess.
500.
Okay. Andy.
I approve 300.
Yes. I would average between $200 to $300, and I could have made that type of money waitressing or bartending. But you want to know what happened? I would talk to, you know, friends, family, whatever. This is how limiting beliefs, and particularly other people's limiting beliefs, are so powerful, and get into your head and start fucking with your head. You know, people would be like, oh, you're going to wait just, oh my God, what if you drop drinks? Oh my God, I would feel so stupid if I made a mess. And oh my God, you're going to wait just, you're not good with money. Are you going to know how much change to give people back? And my biggest thing, stemming from an incident that happened to me in fourth grade that I recall like yesterday, where I was shamed and made an example of by this one teacher for getting a lot of math questions wrong on a homework assignment. My biggest fear was not looking stupid in front of people. So even though I could have made that very unimpressive amount of money doing just about anything, I chose that because that's how little I thought of myself. That's how little I thought of my abilities. You know, I would hear all the time, you know, oh, you have such a nice body. And my mother, who knew what I was doing at the time, said, oh, you know, you were, that body was a curse. You shouldn't have had that body. You wouldn't be doing what you're doing. And so for a long time, you start to think that's the best thing about yourself. Like, you know, without that, how am I really going to make money? You know, and it wasn't until all these years later that I sat back and the best money and the best fulfillment that I have, I'm not using this shit. I'm, you know, I'm on Zooms and things like this. Yeah. And, you know, and fully clothed. And I've never felt sexier or more confident or more fulfilled in my life. And it's just, I don't regret it at all, but it's just such a shame that it takes so long sometimes for us to get to that place, to get to that realization that we're selling ourselves.
Yeah. When you say us, you mean women in general?
People in general. Guys do that shit too. I know plenty of guys that sell themselves short.
I had a call today with a woman who I coached her two sons, and she said, I want to talk to you because my sons had a really great experience and I want to hear your voice. So we're talking on the phone and it was really quite a beautiful talk. And she at some point was recalling her life and telling me how at 50, she was looking back and she was very emotional and how it was hard for her not to see how her life was a failure and how she, you know, not done whatever she'd want to do with her life. And she ended up leaving this individual, her ex at that now. And she didn't celebrate that. She looked at it as I wasted the time, and she didn't say, wow, finally I got the courage. So it was funny as I was hearing her speak, I heard the narration in my head against her narration of the exact same event.
Yes.
And it was, she's looking back at everything lost. I'm like, wow, you've gotten basically the kind of moment in life where you get an opportunity to like be free of the past, but actually you're still a slave to the damn person in this thing because you can't let go of that shit, you know? And
exactly. We don't celebrate our wins, right? We're so used to looking at something through a negative lens and a lens of regret. I almost feel like regret is like a drug, and we see so many people around us stuck in this perpetual state of regret and could have, should have, would have, that it almost feels wrong if we speed past that and go right to fulfillment and skip all that bullshit, right? Everyone else is there. Why? Who am I to get ahead of that shit? But really, regret is, you know, regret is, it's self-torture. It's self-torture. And within regrets, there are things that you can flip the script on and actually find, like you said, worth celebrating. And that's what we need to do more. We need to be celebrating shit more rather than sitting in this quicksand of regret.
Yeah, many people will think, oh, that's positive.
Positivity?
Yeah. In a way, it is a mindset. You're like rewiring your brain to see the world in a certain lens.
Mm-hmm. And toxic positivity, like, I'm not going to sit there and say if you murdered someone, find the silver lining of that. You know, it's within reason. It's all relative. But, you know, like, there are just certain situations where instead of seeing the mistake, see the resiliency. Like, I look at it like, wow, yeah, I fucked up, but I made it through that shit. I made it through that shit, and now that's my gift. That experience is my gift to share with other people, to empower them through whatever their storm is that they're going through, you know. Or if they've come out on the other side of that, to make them feel like that's not something that you have to throw in your closet and be so overly protective of and live your life in fear of people finding out. Like, stand firm in who you are. Yeah.
So I want to go back to the relationship part of the story. Mm-hmm. Like, so he goes into detox and he goes and asks for help.
Yeah.
So how did the relationship evolve from that point? And where did you say, I'm done?
Yeah. So what happened was, once again, I didn't say I'm done. I, at that point, finally felt comfortable enough that, you know, one thing that's great about my parents, they always allow us to land back home. Like, it's like when you're playing tag and there's home base, that's where you're safe. Like, yeah, they always come back to base, like when we needed to collect ourselves. So I desperately wanted to go back before them, but I could not stomach the idea of putting them in the line of possible danger. Like I was in, and my attitude was, Lisa, you made your fucking bed, now you're gonna lie in it. You're not gonna bring this around your younger sisters. You're not gonna bring this around your family. But when he did that, I knew that he was okay with separation. And so I felt safe enough to go back there. And the relationship, like, I still went to go visit him. He wound up moving on while he was there. And that wound up being the thing that I needed. Like, listen, if he could do this, if he could make responsible decisions, if he can move on from this relationship, what the fuck are you waiting on?
Yeah.
You're more than capable.
Isn't it incredible? When people heal themselves, they become an example for everybody else. Because in some weird way, like, I remember when I was in my family dynamic at a young age, and I was participating in all the shit. Then at some point I went to go see a psychologist. I don't know what it was at that time, and I was getting healthier. And then I noticed that all of a sudden the family was starting to wonder what's going on because Andy seems okay. And then they started going to psychiatrist. So I was about, like, I didn't tell them to do it. They just started to be an example of, okay, that feels like it's a little cleaner energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Because before that, I mean, as an example to my much younger sisters, they would hear me on the phone fighting with my ex and crying. And what the hell kind of example is that? So by the time I went back this next time, I had enrolled in ultrasound school. I said, you know what? I was a beautician. I was like, you know, this was fun. It's not going to be a living for myself. I went back to ultrasound school. I got around a different group of people. I wasn't around women who were also themselves in these shitty relationships. And, you know, it was that camaraderie, you know, of, oh, you
misery and company. Yeah.
Taking turns of terrible stories and, oh, girl, you'll be all right. Encouraging each other to just be strong and continue the same path. And ironically, those relationships took an absolute nosedive once I started to, you know, get better. I thought that I would be this, like you said, this beacon of hope for them. And, oh, hey, look what's possible. They didn't want to look at me and see the reflection of where they still were. So those relationships also fell off, where you would think that those would be like your biggest supporters. Not necessarily.
I love the way that you phrased that one. We discussed it a little bit on yesterday's show. Was I was a reflection of what they didn't want to see in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's really beautifully stated. Mm. I noticed that for many years, I hid my happiness because I saw that it made some people feel uncomfortable, or at least I sensed that. And I would sort of limit my really sharing of how happy or how well I felt. I mean, even during COVID time, I was having the best time. And it was like, and said, guys, this is like the best year, you know, like you couldn't do that. There, of course, people were suffering and so on. But
right.
He posted a picture of an airline he was on, and he was the only one on it, traveling from the States to Holland.
Yeah.
And then Andy said, my private jet, which was like a joke, but someone sent him a whole message like, like vanity, showing off your money. I don't remember what.
I just laugh because for me, life is a joke. So I'm sitting there like, I got a private jet. You know, this is my mind right now. And then I realize the next moment, like the humor of it is like from someone through the lens of, oh, I guess he can afford a jet like that. And I guess he's showing off his wealth. Like, I'm thinking, on what planet are you, you know, and worse off, if I had a jet, I'm sure as hell not going to sit in economy class.
Right. Well, because we're taught that you can't be tone deaf. So you have to like tone down your happiness for everyone else in the room. Right.
Yeah.
You can't be above the level of everyone else in the room, because then you're tone deaf. Then you're insensitive to other people's needs. Right. God forbid you be that light of hope, you be that voice of humor. Like, let's take a minute to just take a deep breath, exhale, and have a little laugh real quick. You know? Right. So yeah. Society.
We had a guest on several, it feels like years ago now. It would have been like, we started this show at the beginning of COVID, and we're now at 267 shows. So wow. This show didn't exist pre-COVID. And this one guest, Kirk Scott, who had a better vocabulary than I did, he said, when I come on or watch your show, and maybe if he's watching today, he'll correct it. There is a word he sent me. He says it was cockkine, some SAT word that I don't know. But it was a land of joy and hope in the middle of misery. Like a fabricated land of joy. And I wrote back and said, was this kind of an insult? And he said, no. It's really like, I really listened to you thinking there's real hope out there.
Yeah. See?
And we don't actually feel this hope.
No, exactly.
You're faking it.
Well, I think we feel joy in spite of the fact that we still feel a sense of hope.
Yeah.
I would say that. What were you going to say?
Yeah, there's a celebration of life. Mm-hmm. There's also the other part where people put a mask on and show that everything's good.
Right.
Yeah.
There's also the celebration of the shit, and there's also the not talking about the shit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And everything has its place depending on the context. Mm-hmm. Today, actually, I made a post on social media where I kind of shared a little bit about my, in the past, it was really difficult to share about financial success and being in a loving relationship. And today I'm like, yeah, this is where I am right now. Bam.
Right.
And in the past, I'd be scared because in case I lose it and then what? And now it's like, this is what it is right now.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm really happy.
Yeah.
And I'm sharing this.
Exactly. We can learn to enjoy what is without overthinking. Is it going to remain like this? You know, is it going to change?
Well, hopefully it does.
Yeah, I remember when I would say to Bamos when he was having a really, I would start celebrating what was going on. He's like, Andy, it's only this month. Andy, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
If you watch the first half a year to a year of this show, I'm crying. He's laughing.
It was painful. It was painful.
But the ratings went up when I cried.
When he cried, we got a lot of viewership because everyone's like, what's going on here? We got to watch now.
And people want to see emotion now and want to hear emotion. Like, we're walking around with our faces covered or we're not walking around and seeing our neighbors at all. So to see someone showing real emotion when we're all feeling real emotion and not really getting a chance to see and witness other people feeling it and going through it, that's huge.
Yeah, I have to admit my past state of being, which was related to also my bank account back then, it was kind of addictive. It became a way of being, a way of getting validated attention.
Yeah.
And in stepping into the celebration, it's like, oh, wow. So today I was on the And It's Fucking Great group. Uh-huh. And I was like, what the fuck do I share here?
Exactly.
Because that group is really for sharing things which are a bit vulnerable or something that's really difficult for you. And then you end it with hashtag and it's fucking great.
I mean, if I were you, Bambos, I would say I'm having a great time. I got nothing to post here. And it's fucking great. That's what I would have loved to have seen.
Something, what you said, though, is really on point, though, because it becomes addictive to stay in that kind of, not victimhood, I don't want to call it victimhood, but in that place where, you know, where people come up to you, like when I would tell other people about what I was dealing with, right? It wasn't about me having to get my shit together. When I had those abusive relationships and just people around me not doing what I thought they should be doing, it was always, you know, if only everyone else around me would just get their shit together, then I could do A, B, C, and D. So I, as long as I was in that mentality, I didn't have to take ownership.
Yeah.
For how I played a role in it. I'd have to take ownership for my own personal growth. And I had other people that when I would talk to, I would be the one that they felt bad for. And then they would compliment me. I was fucking up left and right. And I'd get compliments because I hear, oh, you know, you're so amazing. You talk like you're such an old soul. Like, you know, the people around you are so lucky to have you. Like, I don't know how you do it. So that would make me feel good. It was this artificial blowing smoke up my ass. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was lies. But I then, on top of that, felt comfortable enough to lie to myself and just accept it.
Yeah.
Nice. How was it for the first time when you came out of the closet with all this and when you started you started talking about it? Can you share a little bit the space before and what it took for you to take that step?
Absolutely. It was probably right around the same time you guys started your podcast. So it was sometime like just after COVID hit. And my husband had just had a stroke and was recovering from a stroke. So there was like major shit happening. So he had a stroke, then COVID hit, you know, then I had the kids home all the time and just emotions and so much was just heavy. And I had to, you know, like time and necessity was just pushing me forward. You know, I had to make sure they were okay in dealing with their father's condition. I had to make sure he was okay. So time pushed me forward. And then one night I had this dream. I had gotten into a little bit of a falling out with my mother and a couple of my sisters. And I had this dream where I felt like everything that I grew up being told and hearing was fucking bullshit. And I had the most epic breakdown and rebuild. And so in that, I sat there and I said, what the fuck am I doing hiding my shit? Like, who am I to hide my shit? Like, look at everything that I am holding down around me. And I'm going to sit here and walk on eggshells and pretend like I didn't do certain things that I did. Fuck this. Everyone in my life deserves to know the, you know, the real me, and I deserve to be seen and heard fully. I called my father and I had a good conversation with him. And one of the things I broke it to him that, you know, I wound up doing that because, you know, A, B, C, and D. And I didn't say he was, you know, to blame, but I just said, you know, this was my train of thought. This is how I processed it. And then my poor husband. And then I went to my
Okay, but your husband didn't know about this until you told him.
He knew that I worked in strip clubs, but he thought that it was in the capacity of like cocktail waitressing.
Okay.
So I came clean to him, and the poor thing, he's like recovering from a stroke. So, and he said to me, cause he never lost his sense of humor and he's doing so much better now. Thank God. But he's like, I like how you fucking wait till I'm half crippled to tell me this shit.
And two kids in.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not after one kid you thought you could get away telling me. You need two kids to think.
He's such a fucking gem. It's unbelievable. But so, and I came clean to him because, you know, you get to a point in life, and again, I wish we didn't wait, you know, male or female, I wish we didn't wait so long in our lives to do this shit, but where you're just like, whoever is still in my life, because I don't have that phone full of numbers of wanting to hang out and shit like that. The few people that I still have in my life, I'm willing to whittle that down even more.
Yeah.
By showing who I really am and letting you know truly what I've been through. And so
how many left you?
Yeah, how many people left?
None.
Beautiful.
None.
It's funny though, because if I'm with you right now and spending this hour with you, you're really speaking. Like, it's like it's a waterfall. And I can imagine, like, just before COVID, your voice was probably like damned.
Well, I was hysterical crying. Like when my father, I delivered it over text messages. My husband and I obviously delivered it to one person, and I was hysterical crying. I woke up from this dream in what almost was like a panic attack, and he was so disturbed. He was like, oh my God, what the fuck's wrong? I'm like, no, the kids are right. I need to talk to you. It's ironic that that's your perception of it, because for the first time, I felt like my voice was finally big. And when I got that out, it allowed me to show up in my business even bigger than I had been playing it. So there is such, like, when you take the shackles off of yourself, then life gets interesting. Life gets good. Yeah. Now you have harnessed this power of curiosity and possibility, right? Oh my God, if I could be this free, if I could feel this unweighted, what else can I do in my life? Or who else can I affect, you know?
I was actually referring to the time you were wearing the shackles. You were probably like a dam holding everything in.
You know what? When I first started in that industry, I would bump into someone from high school. I said, oh, I'm working in a strip club right now. And their jaw would drop. I mean, I was such an introverted, quiet, you know, kid in school, always under the radar. So I was very open about it initially because I didn't think I had anything to be ashamed of. Like, and isn't that so true? Like, that's how children are. Like, they do whatever they're going to do and they feel however they're going to feel. until we step in and make them feel ashamed for doing certain things and showing certain emotions. So I had that childlike, like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, you know, whatever. And then as I started getting reactions from people, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't be so forthcoming.
Oh, yeah. And you know? Lectured. Did you get lectured by people saying, oh, this is not a good thing and that kind of stuff?
Never lectured. But like I had a couple of guys that I thought were such like cool guys and good friends and, you know, say things to me like, oh, well, what club are you working at? Oh, will you give me a lap dance? Or like just things that were so like, huh? Like I thought it was like, huh? Whereas somebody else from the outside probably would have been like, well, you're stripping. What do you expect people to talk to you like? I really didn't see that differentiation between myself and what I was doing because I was still just me. you know what I mean? I was still just me. And so, you know, other people's perception get into their...
Were there uncomfortable situations like that where there would have been people you knew in the clubs at times? Or how, did that ever happen?
There was one incident. Oh my
God. Like the priest from the priest.
not the priest, but the pizza shop owner. The pizza shop owner that my grandparents, his shop was like two blocks from my grandparents. And I was always at my grandparents growing up. We went there all the time. My grandmother used to talk to his mother who was cooking in the back in Italian. And so this guy saw me grow up. He walked into the club one time and he didn't initially recognize me because it was years. And he said, oh, who's that girl over there? And when they were like, oh, some gentleman would like to dance with you. And I was like, oh my fucking God, it's Vito. And I was like, no, tell him I'm sick. Tell him my shift is over. I said, no, this is not fucking going down right now.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he got a glimpse of me and then I knew it clicked for him because then he hauled shit out of there. So it was like,
Vito, run for it.
What are you doing here? I'm like, what are you doing here?
Who's, you know, everyone, no one's going to say a word to anybody. No one wants to explain.
No, that's not getting out.
Yeah.
And now it's for the rest of your life on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's you know, when you said this freedom of, I had a call with, a relative. I probably shouldn't go into too many details nowadays because other people are here besides us. But I was speaking to them and I spoke from the freedom that you spoke from a moment ago. Like, you know, the shackles are gone. I'm fucking living. You know, I'm okay if you don't like me, but fucking get out of my way. You know, like it's all good. I'm over the, I got to change so you feel less uncomfortable. Like that's gone.
This was today.
This was yesterday.
Yesterday.
And then this sweet voice came back and it just said, Andy, I totally get it. And I still need things from society.
Oh, wow.
And it was this, it was like a beautiful moment where there wasn't judgment towards me or the other or anything. It was more like an appreciation of a state.
Yes.
Like there's an estate where we all can see that like we are in need or desire or longing for connection and connection comes when we alter our behavior so that we're societally considered whatever normal is.
Right.
And it was really beautiful to hear this come back from, you know, someone in their early 20s. So that was really quite special.
Yeah. That's incredible. And, you know, when we put our guard down and we live the example, it's one thing to tell people, oh, you should do this. You should be your most authentic self. You know, you hear that shit all the time.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say to people. It's another thing to model it for people.
Yeah.
It's another thing to show up as your authentic, I like to call it full frontal or bare ass self and show people your spirit and your soul and how, you know, you walk around differently, you speak differently. And when people see it rather than hear you, you know, should all over them, it hits them differently too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's what I always say. Cause in the Buddhist traditions, there's not like the Bible that you read. It's that the monk through their behavior will teach the people that are around them. So it's through the example, not through the word.
Right.
And I've always found that in my world, how I want to live is that, you know, I actually, it's not all that dissimilar because in a way I will be mentoring Bambos. And I had an individual in my life where I basically sold everything I owned just to be in his environment for the 10 years that I was with him. Wow. And what I got in those 10 years was to sort of take on another persona, because through being with this individual, I learned what life felt like if I took that jacket and wore it. But it was hard. It was hard to wear it myself. So I needed to see how he wore it. And then in time, I could wear it myself.
So yeah. For those of you who want to be more of this, watch this podcast over and over again.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but I don't know. Do they get it from the podcast? I don't think so.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Before we started the podcast, I used to record every fucking conversation we would have, and I go back and listen to it and like hammer it into my brain.
And you know what the nice thing is it's like I see that it's a state of being. It isn't being right. So like I'll be wrong in 50% of the things I say, and it doesn't fucking matter. It's like, am I listening to myself speak and hearing where it doesn't sound right and immediately saying, hold on, this doesn't sound right. You know, or like I told a client the other day, do this, don't say that. And then they said, I don't know what to do then. I said, well, tell me what you're going to say. And then they said back to me exactly the thing I told them not to say. And I said, oh, that's perfect. You know, because I could hear the intonation and the way they said it was far more important than the words they were using. And I was concerned the words they were using were going to limit their connection with this other individual. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, they were connected to that space of, I'm not judging you. I'm not judging me. I'm just stating this. And the words he used in a way, the nuance of words, people can interpret some words easier than others. So I'll try to take out the words that can be used to interpret in my own language. Just because why do I need another thing to stop us from connecting?
Right.
But if it's done authentically, that's always for me more important than the words one uses, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
I had a question. So what was with your now husband? Mm-hmm. What was the thing that was, what would you say, categorically different around the relationship with him compared to the toxic relationships before?
Oh my God.
That says it all.
He's secure. He's a secure person. He never needed me to stroke. He never needed anyone to stroke his ego. He responsible, respectful. He gave me room. And this was the big selling point for me. He gave me room to be me without judgment. He gave me room to be me without judgment. He welcomed me into his world without conditions or without making me feel like I had to win him. Like, not to say that he's like a spineless thing, you know, whatever, he can get anyone he wants, which also made me feel really special because he's just that amazing of a person. But he gave me space, but he also made me feel loved in the actions and in his considerations towards me. So it was this thing where I knew that I was genuinely cared for, and he didn't just say these outrageous things, you know, to feed me lines. He did these things that were not even outrageous, but just straight from the heart that showed that he cared and that he was a gentleman and that he took pride in, and I know I might get shit for this, but whatever. He took a lot of pride in the traditional role of being the provider and being the stand up, like I protect you, I'll take care of you, but I'll also, because I'm so secure, let you and support you in any way I can for you to go out there and do your own thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just, I mean, that's what you want in life. You want someone who allows you to be yourself, loves you for who you are. And, you know, when they go out and do their own thing, you know that they are secure enough that they don't need to go out and look for that ego stroke, because that's something my exes, they were so incredibly self-conscious. And even though I had this perception of them that they were the ones with the power, I finally realized that I actually started feeling pity towards them because they felt so powerless that they had to try to control me and they had to abuse me in order to feel any sense of power and being seen. So just the fact that he was the total opposite in that sense, that he could say, oh, go out and have fun with your friends, you know, and not have that control. And I could say, oh, you go and have fun with your friends and not have a knot in my stomach about what I'm going to you know, what's going to be in his wallet or phone calls at odd hours. Like, it was liberation. It was just total freedom. Freedom to love and freedom to be loved. That's all, you know, that's what it boiled down to.
Yeah, that, like, I swear to you, I'll be with people in it, like, literally in the first, say, minute. Like, there'll be subtle interactive moments, subtle, you could call them micro expressions, but I've never done a course, but that's the words I've heard. Like, that little snapshot of a facial expression that says everything that relationship is about through a reaction from what one of them says.
Yeah.
He's going out with his friends next day. You know, like whatever that. And it's amazing how much you can tell about what that relationship is like. And people, I don't think, are aware of how much they're giving away all the time if perceptive people are around them. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I'll always make, because as a kid, that was sort of a superpower, was like seeing the little facial and then writing the narrative that was pretty easy to write if you could see.
Yeah.
And then just having fun. But my mom called me the shit stirrer because I made trouble with that, of course.
Not only his mom, but his teachers and his dad.
Yes. I wasn't loved by many. I have a question that's probably the most important one of the show.
Okay.
I want to know, you mentioned that when you told your husband of this, that he made a joke, yeah. But going forward after that, were there issues that came up, any trust issues, or did he say, honey, can you do a dance for me? Like, what happened afterwards?
No. No, you know what it is? What it is about my husband is he's really protective of me. So, like, he's not comfortable with me talking about it because he feels like he wants to shield me from other people's perception, which is crazy because he knows I have a certain degree of crazy in me. Like, if someone really wanted to get crazy, like, my tongue could be a very deadly weapon, but I choose not to go that route these days. But, like, I'm really good at sticking up for myself, and I'm already at that point where, what are you going to say to me that's going to hurt my feelings? But he still has, because of his protectiveness of me, it's not that it bothers him, but he knows how other people think. He doesn't want them to think like that of me. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but that is beautiful, that sentiment, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because I think if you love someone so much, the last thing you want is the feeling that they might put themselves in a situation that isn't safe for them or whatever it might be. So that is quite beautiful, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another reason, you know, you asked before, what's so different about this relationship? Not only would he never hurt me, like, he'd jump in front of a train for me and not even have to think about it.
Yeah. We had one comment that came in from Bola Long in South Africa. He's always with us. He says, I think my real behavior will attract the people who deserve to be in my life. If I change it to accommodate others, I will miss those important people. Yeah, that I think as one ages and they see that they've spending time with people that don't bring them connection in themselves, they just don't feel well, that they'll just slowly, they don't need to be with people as much as I've noticed in my own life. So you tend to have fewer and fewer people that you really want to spend time with. And those that you do, you just really enjoy because you feel better afterwards.
Yeah. You don't need the distractions, right? Like, once you start getting more comfortable in yourself and accepting of yourself, you don't need the distractions. You don't need the people that are just like the gestures in front of you. You know, what is it? The court jesters that they used to have, the kings that are just juggling entertainment. You don't need that shit anymore. You have your own things that you're doing. You have good people around you that you love spending time with. And more importantly, you feel comfortable spending time with yourself. Believe it or not, I am the biggest introvert and I love being in my own energy. And when I'm around a lot of people, I can enjoy it and I could be, you know, I could talk like this, but I need my time to completely withdraw right after that and recharge in my own energy. And when I was younger, I couldn't do that. I needed my distractions.
Yeah. We have had an incredible time with you and we haven't actually discuss anything of what you do today. So it would be nice just to, like, let anyone know what you actually do for a living and how you've been gracious enough to talk about stuff that isn't necessarily even pertaining to what you do.
Thank you. Well, I am a business mindset coach. And like I said, I'm usually on podcasts talking about how you can strategically use your personal growth to grow your business and get more clients. Because, you know, my motto is you show me a business that is, you know, not growing, I'll show you an owner who has, you know, become stagnant with their own inner work and their own personal growth. So that's what I do. I had great success. Like I said, I went and I became an ultrasound tech, but I stopped that because we had our children back to back and I needed to be home. And, you know, and I'm not one to just do one thing. I'm one to challenge myself. So I love it. I love, and I'm sure you can attest to this, I love helping people have those breakthrough moments. I love seeing them get a little uncomfortable and that body shift when I know that they're about to make that shift. And it's like, oh, you got it. You're right there. So yeah, that's what I do now.
And how does one find you?
You can go to my website. It's lisalatimer.com. You can join my Facebook group, She So Blessed Mindset. And my podcast is She So Blessed Mindset as well.
Nice. Well, thank you for being with us. I have to say, we didn't speak. We said, okay, I'm going to put this crazy title on the show. And I have to admit, like when I put those on and we haven't spoken beforehand, I'm always not sure what the hell is going to happen. So in a way, it was like, this is a roll of the dice. And I just have to tell you, it was really incredible to be with you. And I'm really grateful for the time we had together.
Maybe we can come up with a more interesting subject.
Yeah, I think we can
talk about depression.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We'll have to have another show because this hour went way too fast and there's far more interesting topics we also didn't.
You haven't written a book yet, right?
I do. I have a book that I self-published on Amazon. It's called Who the Fuck Are You? And it's about self-awareness. There's a little bit about my journey in there, a lot of what we talked about, because I really think that, you know, that knowledge of yourself and that acceptance and understanding of yourself is your greatest asset in this world.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that way.